Seder on Pesach is arguably the Manishtana. Manishtana and the kids are sitting, saying it over, and they're so cute, and each one of them is trying to say it in Yiddish and Spanish and all the other languages, and they're going over and they're saying what they need to say, etc. It's just everyone sits with rapt attention as he goes through that explanation. So the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, explains that the real question of Manishtana night is, why is this night different? The night itself different than all other nights? It's not about just the mitzvos of the day that are different. It's the night itself. Why is the night different? Laila, he says, should be Lashon Nekeva. And although throughout Tanakh, Laila is Lashon Zohar, that's how it's used throughout all of Tanakh, but the Vilna Gaon points out that the word Laila with a hey at the end should be Lashon Nekeva. Should be Lashon Nekeva. So in fact, it shouldn't be Manishtana HaLaila HaZeh, which is seemingly masculine, but rather it should be Manishtana HaLaila HaZos, which is feminine. That's the way that it should be. Not. But nonetheless, it should be. That's your question. Now, I do agree that that would, without a question, ruin the song. Right? Because if you say, Manishtana Laila HaZos, right, Mikol HaLeilos, then it sounds a little bit more poetic. So it's not as good. I definitely hear that. I can hear it. But that can't be the answer. So the Gra says that typically nights are not a time for mitzvahs. And this has been argued before, but there is no night. There is no mitzvah that can only be done at night and no other time during the day. For example, Kriyashma, right, which is obviously a mitzvah that you say at night, also has a chiyuv during the day. There's a chiyuv of Kriyashma during the day. There are some other mitzvahs that you might go through. At the end of the day, anything you think of, the mitzvah could be done during the day, or it has an aspect of something during the day, but not only at night itself, except for Seder night. Seder night must be done. Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim must be done at night. So it has somewhat, this night has the clarity, has the bearer of being a daytime night. That's the idea behind it. It has the bechina, so to speak, of a day. And therefore, it's spoken of as a day. Manishtana HaLaila HaZeh. In fact, the Pasuk uses the word, right, when we're referring to the night of Pesach, it uses the word of day to refer to it. The Gadatah Lebincha, you should tell it over to your children, by Yom Ahu. By Yom Ahu is a reference to Pesach night. It's not referring to the day of the 15th, it's not referring to any other day, right? And even the Haggadah itself, Yahoo by Yom Ahu, maybe it's from Rosh Chodesh, we have ideas of what it could be, but by Yom Ahu refers to the night itself, which is an amazing idea. How that works. So that takes a little bit of work. Mesillas Yesharim, in the very beginning, speaks about Choshech and what Choshech really is. What is the definition of Choshech? What is real darkness? And he says there are two things, two aspects to the darkness. Number one, if it's dark outside, you may not be able to see what's there in front of you. You'll trip over it. You'll fall because you didn't see it. If there's a stumbling block in the road, it's going to be very difficult to be able to get past that little stumbling block that's there. That's number one. But number two, says Mesil Sharman, this one may be a little bit worse. It's a misperceiving of things. You see a pillar as if it's a person, and you see a person as if it's a pillar. You mistake things for being what it isn't. And it fools you into doing things that you never would have done otherwise. So while one aspect of darkness is simply put, I can just walk a little bit more careful. And if I walk slowly, putting my hands out in front of me, I'm not going to be tripped up by what's there in the darkness. That's one aspect that I can get around in a certain way. But the misnotion, the idea of this is something else, me making that mistake, that's not something I can fix. My brain is already adapting to the fact that it's dark outside. I see things in a different act. I see things in a different way. You can't tell the difference between what's good and what's evil, what's a person and what's a pillar. And the truth is, that is Choshech, nighttime, and this entire world. In our world, it's the same idea, the same concept, says Mesil Sisharim. That everything is so confusing, where what looks like it's a really good thing, what looks like is the best thing for a person to do, that looks like it's real fun. At the end of the day, ends up being evil and terrible for you to do. And the things that seem like they're not so great, seem like they're not so good for you, or something that's out there, turn out to be the best things for you. The absolute best things for you. ask anyone who has a food allergy, who had a tremendous tiger for that food before he got that food allergy. Then all of a sudden, he can't eat it. There's no way he can eat it. So I knew somebody. It was a girl who loved Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. Okay, so it's not me. I'm a guy. So there was a girl who loved Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. Every time she had peanut butter, especially with chocolate, she would pass out for 3 hours. That's what happened to her. Every time. She couldn't handle it, meaning her whole system shut down for a couple hours after having Reese's Peanut Butter Cup. But she wanted it so badly. So she's married. She has 3 kids. Okay? And she went to her husband, and she said, "I'm not feeling well. Can you take care of the kids tonight?" Went to her room, ate 5 Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, and passed out for the next 3 hours. Do you understand? That is absolutely unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I mean, she couldn't stop herself. She couldn't. So she wouldn't tell it over to her husband, but she told it to my wife and I. And she said, "This is what happened. This is what we did." And we just said, it's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. First of all, I wanted to shake her hand. I can't because I'm a guy. Right? But I wanted to shake her hand. I said, "That's absolutely amazing. There's no better story than that. Not even I have that kind of a love for Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. I don't think I'd be able to pass out for them." Right? But nonetheless, I totally respect that. That's number one. But in the second, it's unbelievable. This is where people are holding. This is where people are. This is what they're doing. It's unbelievable. There's Ramban at the end of Parsha's book. The Ramban says that this night, the 15th of Nisan, during Makas Bechoros, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Megala himself to the world, revealed himself to the world, and made everyone see through that darkness. Was able to make everyone see what was real and true in this world. During Makas Bechoros, everyone, even Paro, understood that there was truly a God and that he was watching over the Jews. Everybody understood it. And at that moment, they saw what was there's no way that Moshe Rabbeinu could have predicted this. Maybe he could predict the weather. Maybe he could predict animal migrations. Maybe he has the ability to predict what's going to happen in a river. But there's no way that he could predict death on such a massive scale to the Bechoros of Klal Yisrael. They saw it with their own eyes. They were clear. But it got worse, right? Because as time went on, it became so much more greater. In a strange world where people don't believe in anything, right, that was Egypt back in the day, they all of a sudden saw Creator where it was. The sun shone through, everything was clear on this night. So the night became the aspect of a day. It became a real day. Here's the line that the Ramban uses at the end. You know what we learn from that? Sheker hachein v'hevel ayofi. Sheker hachein means the favor of a lady is all lies. The beauty that she has is all hevel, it's all garbage. Because you look at a woman and you see beauty, and then all of a sudden you think to yourself, "Oh, that's a beautiful woman, that's the person that I want to marry, that's the person that I want to be around, that's the person that I'm there." But on the inside, she could be totally different and a piece of garbage. Sheker hachein v'hevel ayofi is used to describe the generation of Moshe and Aaron. It's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. Chaval mentions it's used to describe Sheker hachein v'hevel ayofi zudor shel Moshe v'Aaron. You know why? So people didn't get anything on the inside. They just saw these huge miracles and were affected by them and decided to do things based on the big miracles that were there. The key to life is not to have clarity. That's not what this world is all about. That's Olam Haba. The key to Olam Haza is not for clarity. It's not to be clear, "I understand everything and how the world works." That's not what this world is about. It's to have emunah in the midst of the night. It's to realize that there's something there and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is behind the scenes working all the way through. And if someone asks me, "Why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu doing it?" for me to gladly tell him, "I don't know." How am I supposed to know? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the only one that knows that answer. Our world is about building up your emunah to the point where you have no kashas anymore. Because they don't matter. That's what it's all about. Not about totally understanding it. In the generation of Moshe and Aaron, they were understanding it. They were watching the Midah Keneged Midah. They were seeing the oppressors being oppressed. They saw these things happening. And they said to themselves, this is an awesome life. We can see everything. But the Chekarachim al-Aliyoti, that is a one-time experience to allow Klal Yisrael to come to the point where they could be Mekabel Matan Torah. That will never happen again. Not in this world. That can't happen. That's chayin and yopi that is not deserving for us to be around. That generation lived with the Be'er Shomirim, with the Mun, with the Anani HaKavod, a life of miracles, of clarity that there is a God that's up in Shemayim, seeing God with their own eyes, not only at Kriyas Yamsuf, but also at Matan Torah. That's a life that's not for us. That is not what Olam Hazeh is all about. That is a one-time thing, a glitch, so to speak, in the system, to allow the Bnei Yisrael to become the people that they became. And from then on, we're back to our lives of Emunah being number one, and everything else being number two. And for the truths to be obscure. See, let's think, when it comes to Yetzias Mitzrayim, what would CNN and BBC have written? If they would be talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim, if they were around at the times of the Makos and at Kriyas Yam Suf and Yetzias Mitzrayim, they'd speak, number one, right, about how the Makos were truly natural events, which really could be explained with the right meteorologist. See, I was calling it 2 years ago that this climate change was going to cause some tremendous. You have that many people building and putting that much dust into the air. Well, you should expect for such weather, inclement weather to come through, and the animals will go crazy and far out. I mean, it's never snowing and hailing in Mitzrayim, but it's clear that if you put that much dust into the air, then there's going to be global something or other. We'll call it warming, and this is clear. I called this from the beginning. That's for sure. No question about that. You're going to have the naturalist, the scientist, to get up there. You know what I just found out? There's a guy who was he's in the Guinness Book of World Records. He has spoken on 10,000 topics for news things around the world. He doesn't know anything. He's a construction worker in London. But he sounds smart, and he reads about some things. He has no experience in anywhere, and it was his mission, this is his mission, to go on as many TV shows, news shows as possible, and pretend to be an expert. And they would interview him, and he'd give answers. His name now is, all the reporters have his name, but they can't use him anymore. So he has the record. He's been on 10,000. He is not an expert in anything. He's never been to college. And he is an expert, the expert that is used by all these different news stations. They all call this guy. He's a war correspondent. Everything. Everything you can think of. This guy is it. Yeah, but the news is real. Don't worry. It's all there. They speak about how much we truly owe the Egyptians, right? I mean, that's what, for sure, CNN would do that. I mean, the Egyptians gave us a home. They gave us a place to go when we had nowhere to go during the hunger. They gave us food. They gave us drink. And then when we were hired to build their pyramids and to help their economy, right, we shirked our responsibility in the middle. And what do? We gave excuses as to how we couldn't work because it was Shabbos and we weren't allowed to do it. And we had unfounded claims of mistreatment by the Egyptians, right? We had no proof that they had actually done anything to us. And in fact, the records kind of show that the Jews propagated pretty well while they were there. They didn't lose numbers. They gained in numbers while they were slaves in Egypt. So clearly the Egyptians were not maltreating them or treating them improperly, right? So that happens to be. And then at the very, very end, after they shirked the responsibilities for 6 months, while bad things were happening to the Egyptians, right, and everything was happening to them, after not going to work for 6 months straight and expecting to be paid for it, they went, lied, borrowed money, ran away for 3 days, and then never came back. So when the Egyptians, obviously, went to go get their money back, what did the Jews do? Fooled them into drowning at the Yam Suf. Those Jews. I mean, this is the beginning of the United Nations, isn't it? That was the very beginning. It's all about how we messed up. And for sure, it was high tide, and that's what happened. Oh, and by the way, that money that they borrowed, in which they should probably pay it back to the widows and orphans of the Egyptians, because those widows and orphans just lost all that money. The Jews ran away with the money as well and didn't pay the widows and orphans. And then you have a picture of like some random widow in Egypt. It's like, Look what the Jews did. It's crazy, right? But we have a Torah. And the Torah tells us the real truth. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu really wanted out of it. So let me ask you. What in the world was going on? How did this happen? What occurred? Why the charade? Why did we lie? That we were going to borrow money and then go for 3 days and then come back. So what was the point of that? Tell me, was there a real point? It was just, it was a nice trick. It was an April Fool's joke that just went a little bit too awry. Right? Which one was it? What happened exactly? So again, this whole episode shows how deep HaKadosh Baruch Hu's thoughts are. And even in an area of Sheker HaFeim VeHevelayopi, I don't know if Bnei Yisrael truly understood it the way they were supposed to. Each person among the Egyptians got exactly what they deserved. They tricked the Jews into working. So therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu tricked them into dying. They were the ones who threw the Jewish babies into the Nile River. So they were the ones who were drowned in Kriyas Yamsu. They were the ones who took away all the money from the Jews and made sure they worked for them as slave labor. Their money was given over to the Jews. The Jews were told to do things by a Kaddish Baruch Hu. It's not just dumb stuff. And not only that, they were pleaded with. Most of them pleaded with them. Please go ask them for money. Please go get the money from them so that we can leave. And the Jews said, we don't want it. We'd rather just leave. We don't need the money. And most of them said, no, please, I want you to go get money from them. So the Gemara Brachos says in Daf Zayin, right? They had to be pleaded with. They had to be begged to go and take the money away from them. It's amazing. The truth is, this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted for his own Midah Keneged Midah. And he used the Jews as the opportunity to be able to do it through the lie, through whatever it is. But it was for, and just for Midah that didn't manifest itself. But you can't do that on your own. It takes a Munah to realize that. Truth is, without a Munah, there's no way to really get that. In the Drasha Saran, he asked, Bayaminu Bashem of Moshe Avdo. They believed in Hashem and in Moshe's servant. When was that? When was the Bayaminu Bashem of Moshe Avdo? At Kriyas Yam Suf. They didn't believe in Moshe Rabbeinu before? They didn't believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu before? The answer is, they couldn't believe it. Did you just tell us to lie? Did you just tell us to borrow money and then not give it back? They couldn't believe it. They couldn't understand it. And they said to Moshe Rabbeinu Mitzrayim, we can't understand this. There's something wrong. There's something wrong. And for the next 6 days as they were leaving, they kept looking back and saying, wait, when are we getting this money back? Didn't we say we were only going for 3 days? The people believed but didn't believe. And they couldn't understand it. Only at Kriyas Yam Suf, when they saw how every individual Egyptian died in a certain way, like straw, like bricks, like anything, all of a sudden they realized there's something behind this. There's something there. And you know what they believed in? They sat there and they said, we don't get it. We don't get it. It doesn't make any sense to us. And that's okay. Because that's what this world is all about, even in a generation when they saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly. It's okay not to understand the full plan of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's okay to just have that emunah and to believe it without fully understanding. And you know what? I'm going to throw this into the Drash Zeran. Do you think Moshe Rabbeinu understood what they were doing? Think Moshe Rabbeinu understood why they were lying and why they were leading them on to Kriyas Yam Suf? Do you think he got it? Maybe at the end. But even him, Bayaminu Bashem Moshe Abdo, even if you don't understand the plan, it's still about the Amunah. We're in the 21st century. And we have lived very, very enriched lives. Lives that my great-great-grandfather would have begged to have lived. The amount of money I make per day is probably more than the amount that he made per year. And I work in the yeshiva. It's amazing that a rabbi can live a good life. That a rabbi can pretty much buy what he wants without impunity. That's amazing. I'm Rabbanim. I don't want to say this because I'll give deaf people a supplement. Like, they shouldn't have anything. We should be moser nefesh to be able to do. And that's the way it was for thousands of years. Unless the Rabbanim made their own money, the Rabbanim were extremely poor. We're living in an unbelievable world. In an absolutely unbelievable world. And nevertheless, more people died in the last 100 years of warfare than all of the years of the world combined in all of the wars. If they say about World War II that more people died in World War II than every other war previous, including World War I. If you take every war from the beginning of time, of known time, up until World War II, more people died in World War II than all of them, than all of those combined. Think about that for a second. And in an enlightened, wise world that are given so many gifts where everything's working out so well, this is what happens. Destruction, mass destruction, and unbelievable amounts of deaths. Where is the adam, the person that goes through all this? The world is so confusing. So confusing. It makes no sense. The Chazon Ish was asked if the Holocaust was the very last of our suffering. Is this it? are we going to have anything else like the Holocaust ever again? The Chazon Ish couldn't answer. You know why he couldn't answer? Because that's our life. That's what our life is. It's confusing. And we don't get it. And we look up at a Kadosh Baruch Hu and we just say, all I have is you. That's it. We do as much as we can. We learn up until a certain point. And that's about it. I'm going to add on to that, that maybe that's part of what that meant, that Gemara and Chagiga, that everybody knows, but everybody is confused by it, with the parties, that orchard of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's wisdom, where Rabbi Kiva went up and was able to stop himself and come out unscathed. Or Elisha ben Avuya became an apikoros. Ben Azai died, Ben Zomo went crazy. Maybe that's what it refers to. It refers to trying to understand God's plan. And that Ben Azai went a little too far to understand God's plan and died. His mind couldn't handle it anymore. When he got to a certain point, it just fizzled out. Like Ben Zomo, he went crazy. He couldn't understand this and that. There's so much information that has to be processed. How could that be? His mind went crazy. Elisha ben Avuya went off. He couldn't understand it at all. Even when he saw more than what normal people could understand, he said, that doesn't make any sense. That can't make any sense. There's no Amunah. So he went off. And Rabbi Kiva was the only one to say, like, it doesn't matter. And to believe without fully understanding it. And to stop right where he was and say, that's it. And Rabbi Kiva says the most unbelievable line. When you look past that certain area, you're going to see rocks that look like water. It's going to be little rocks that look like water. And you're going to think to yourself and say, Mayim, Mayim. But you can't say that. You can't. Because there's no such thing as a sheker in Shemayim. I think that refers to our exact idea. That we're dealing with something which is beyond human intellect. You're seeing God's plan. You think that God's plan is the water. You're thinking it's like that, but it's not. It's not. The MS is, you have no idea what a Kadosh Baruch Hu was planning. And Rabbi Kiva just said, simply put, you have to step back and say, I don't know. I don't know. And that's fine. I have the Amunah that it's okay. If that's true, then I have an unbelievable line from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. You know, not always, right? But this is an unbelievable line. Unbelievable line. Rav Shlomo Rubashkin said it. Rabbi Sussman quoted it in the Shmooze 5.5 years ago. And he said the following. He said, the Lubavitcher Rebbe was being threatened by a Russian officer. It's obviously back when it was in Russia, not here in America. And he told the man, you will never intimidate me. You know why? Because you live in a world that has two gods and one world. But I live in a world that has one God and two worlds. So you'll never be able to threaten me. You'll never scare me, and I'm not going to be affected by it. It's amazing. If you believe that we have one God and two worlds, how can you be worried about anything? It's being taken care of. And if it's not here, then it's there. If you believe that's there, but if you believe that this is the only world, and there's two gods who are always competing with each other, or possibly arguing, or doing whatever they want to do, maybe even a third, it depends, I think, in which, right? That you've got problems. Of course you've got problems. Of course you're scared. You don't know what's going on. You don't know what to do with your life. That is what the Pesach Seder is supposed to be about. That's what that Lila is supposed to be about. On Pesach night, you're supposed to sit there and you're supposed to say to yourself, you know what, I somewhat get it. I'm not going to get all of it. I'm not going to fully understand. But I'm getting something here. And I'm going to believe that a Kadosh Baruch Hu really truly has a plan for me. And that night has a skula for extra munah, for extra bitachon, to be able to get it better than you would have at any other point in time. To be able to sit there and say to yourself, I get it more. So you sit there on Seder night and you say to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's okay that I don't get it. You know what I find the best about the Arba Banim? The Russia still shows up. There's a little bit of a munah within him that he can't get rid of. He can't get rid of it. It's there. The munah is there. He might not get it. He might be a hater, and he might despise everything that you're doing. But in the end, he's at the Seder, right? He's at the Seder. There's still a little bit of Amunah that even he gets on this night. Even he gets him inside there. It's an amazing idea. But that's how we turn that darkness, that confusion, into somewhat of a light. Something that we'll be able to see and be able to get clearly. Have a good week.